This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Brad Pugh. Brad is a meteorologist with NOAA's Climate Prediction Center in Washington, D.C. joins us in just a moment. Let's go to Oklahoma State University livestock economist Dr. Darrell Peel on the importance of trade.
Part of that strong demand picture that we've had in general is coming from the trade side. So in terms of beef exports, 2021 was a record level, and so far, the first 4 months of 2022 that we have data for, beef exports are up about 6% as well on top of that. So that's holding up pretty well as well. We are seeing some increase in beef imports, but a lot of that is driven by that strong ground beef market that we referenced. And so we've got a lot of need for lean, if you will, to support that ground beef market that we have in the U.S.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Brad Pugh. Brad is a meteorologist with the NOAA Climate Prediction Center. And Brad, first off, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
Well, let's start with you. We're going to swing back around and talk about NOAA and the Climate Prediction Center in just a moment, but a little background about you and how you ended up in the office there in D.C. Did you always dream about getting into weather?
Yeah, so I grew up as a weather enthusiast. It was one of my hobbies growing up. So as a meteorologist now, I'm very fortunate to be doing that as a career. After grad school, I began working with the National Weather Service 22 years ago now.
And I imagine you've had an opportunity to see quite a few things. When we talk about watching the weather and forecasting and climate, were you focused, I guess, growing up? Did you grow up on the east side, west side of the Mississippi?
Yeah, so I grew up just outside of Atlanta. So we had variety of weather, severe weather, the occasional snow, which I always got excited for. You know, pretty kind of a rare event, but we'd see a little bit of snow every now and again.
Now we hear the acronym NOAA. Obviously, everybody knows what the National Weather Service (NWS) is, but we hear that acronym NOAA. I think maybe we need to start by what is it and what you're focused on.
And National Weather Service is a part of that, and the Climate Prediction Center is a part of the National Weather Service. And at the National Weather Service, we monitor and provide weather and climate forecasts to serve the public and also for the protection of life and property.
And we also look into things like drought monitors. And so if you don't mind, let's just kind of jump into that. When we talk about drought, how are we determining drought? And, well, maybe I just need to stop there. How do we determine what drought is when we look at something like a drought monitor?
Yeah, so drought is determined using multiple objective indicators, such as precipitation, soil moisture, and stream flows. But also drought impacts play a role as well in the drought depiction on the map. And it's an iterative process throughout the week. And drought monitor authors do receive feedback from the states and various partners.
And once we are in a drought, what's it take to get out of it? And maybe there are different levels of drought there, so maybe we need to identify those as well. Is it possible to be in a deeper drought than a D4, or is D4 just saying you've got no water?
Yeah, so D4 is what we consider the the exceptional drought. So it's the kind of the worst drought category. And to break out of a drought, it really depends on its intensity and also duration. Short-term drought may be broken after a few weeks of beneficial precipitation, while a long-term drought, you know, could require an entire wet season. And even if that long-term drought is broken out of or ameliorated, some of those long-term drought impacts, such as low reservoirs and ecological impacts, may linger for years to come.
So I am looking at, I guess, the latest drought monitor, and as I look at it, we've seen some areas that have broken out of a drought that they were in, for the last year or so, especially the northern sections of the U.S., North Dakota, over into Minnesota, though there is some areas of drought that remain in Montana. But, man, that desert Southwest, we say desert, I guess, for a reason, because it seems like there's always quite a bit of drought throughout that area.
Yeah, that has been a hot spot for drought over the past couple of decades. We did, though, have back in 2019, so 3 years ago, there was very little drought across the country, but that that changed over the Southwest during the 2020 monsoon season. It was a very dry monsoon, some areas a record dry monsoon. So that kind of kicked off the drought there in the Southwest, and that's been followed by two consecutive La Nina winters, which are typically dry and warm across the Southwest. So, yeah, kind of those factors have really led to multi-year drought there over the Southwest.
Well, it's one thing to look at where we are today, and obviously when we look at the drought monitor, we're looking at a snapshot of what has been happening over the past weeks or months, if you will. But is it possible to look at where we are today and then make projections on where we might be going? In other words, more of a drought forecast, if you will?
Yes, we actually, that's one of our outlooks at the Climate Prediction Center, is a seasonal drought outlook. And the most recent seasonal drought outlook runs through the end of September. And it does call for improving drought conditions for Arizona and New Mexico. And that's related to wet climatology during the next few months, July, August, September. This is three wettest months, or one of the wettest times of year there for Arizona and New Mexico. And also we're kind of favoring above normal precipitation during that 3 month time period. So that's some reason for a little bit of optimism. Although, as I mentioned before, the longer term impacts may persist beyond the end of September.
Is it, and this may be just one of those screwball questions, if you will, but you mentioned, you know, going back to 2019, is it possible for us to look at where we are today and look back in history and say, well, maybe 10 years ago, we saw a similar kind of drought and the ability to come out of? Can we draw anything from historical perspectives at all?
Oh, yes, definitely. In our seasonal outlooks, we do look at analogs depending on what the state of the ocean is. ENSO is very, El Nino, La Nina are very, very important factors in our seasonal temperature and precipitation outlooks. But yes, how that influences the evolution of drought and sort of both the development and also the improvement of drought conditions. For example, typically during La Nina winters, we do see an increase in drought coverage across the country, especially across the southern tier of the country. It tends to be dry and warm during the winter and spring months.
So I'm looking at the Climate Prediction Center's website right now, and I'm kind of wondering if somebody else wants to keep up with what's happening and learn more about the drought monitor or the collaborative work you're a part of. Where are some places we can go? Where can we dig in and find more information?
Yeah, so if you go to the U.S. Drought Monitor webpage hosted by the National Drought Mitigation Center at the University of Nebraska, they actually have a very informative tutorial on kind of the process of how the map is made, get some of the indicators. So, yeah, it's very, very helpful tutorial on their webpage.
Do you have any words of wisdom that, or any words of consolation that you can pass on to producers who might be stuck in that today?
Yeah, I'd just say, you know, the climate does vary from season to season, and so we could go back into a wetter pattern, later this year or next year, and so, yeah, we'll see how everything shakes out over the next year or so. I will say currently we're seeing a drought rapidly develop over parts of the central U.S., but some of that has been it looks like it may be peaking a little bit. We've had some heavy rain in the past couple of days, so this would be July 5th and 6th. Over parts of the Central Plains, Western Corn Belt, and they have some heavy rain ongoing there. So might be kind of peaking with the rapid onset of drought for the Corn Belt, and it looks like the focus for rapidly developing drought over the next 1 to 2 weeks would be Arkansas and southern Missouri.
Brad, it's good to visit with you. Thanks for taking the time. I know it's really busy for you right now, but will you come back and see us maybe somewhere down the road?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, thanks for having me, Tony.
Brad Pugh is a meteorologist with NOAA's Climate Prediction Center in Washington, D.C. on today's Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Time. It's not always a friend, particularly during harvest. Every wasted moment is a chance for rain, shattered pods, and an even later night. So why fumble with those concaves and settings on your combine when you change crops? When you harvest with a Gleaner, switching and setting a crop is quick and easy. Get ready to save time and money with Gleaner. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Brad Pugh, meteorologist with the Climate Prediction Center.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report. Follow along with the U.S. Drought Monitor online, droughtmonitor.unl.edu.
When it comes to farming and dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
A series of cold fronts this week will break down some of the high-pressure ridge or dome that's been keeping the Midwest so very hot and dry. However,
these large, strong ridges of high pressure, once they become fully established, tend not to go away, but they do shift around.
And that is what USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says is underway as we speak. He told us that while the Midwest and Atlantic coast will finally see some rain and cooler temperatures,
the ridge is simply going to shift southward to the south-central United States and also westward into parts of the western United States. Those are the areas that are going to either remain or turn hot and dry in coming days.
For example,
Oklahoma, Texas, and even into parts of the Mid-South, looking like the heat and humidity and lack of rainfall will persist into mid-July.
Yes, so persistent heat stress and dryness for crops in most of the western half of the country.
But the Midwest looking a lot better as we move through the rest of the week.
Gary Crawford, Washington.